Everybody, this is a first. This is a first on the show, and I was just catching up with this lovely human that you're going to get to know. I've done, I've recorded 150 episodes, and or I've released 150 episodes. How do I know that? Because my platform tells me that and told me that this morning. And here with me today, for the very first time, we're going to talk about jewelry, which if anybody of my avid listeners know, it is my sweet spot. So I can't wait to educate you on the jewelry business, Kat. Nope, I'm gonna learn so much. One of the best parts about this podcast is learning about things that otherwise I don't spend much time on. And I'm probably actually your ideal customer because of that too. So my guest today is Kat McCoy. Kat McCoy is the owner of Best Kept Jewelry Concierge. Based in the Northeast, available nationwide. Kat, welcome.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Best Kept Jewelry Concierge. Man, where were you in 2008.
I hear you. I started in 2018, so I was still finding my way at that time. But engagement rings are absolutely a specialty of mine, and milestone gifts. So yeah, anniversaries and birthdays and holidays.
Yeah, we've met too late. I went through that process in, it was 2008. And I am like the prototypical, like, what the heck is going on? You need to tell me exactly what you want because I know nothing about this industry. I'm like the perfect person to go, hey, can you do this for me around this topic specifically? So we're going to get into all this and more. We're going to get to know you today. So Kat, let's kick this off and tell us about something you nerd out about.
So on the jewelry side, I would say I nerd out about prongs. I make a lot of custom engagement rings, and there are so many factors that go into creating a very, very beautiful ring. But I think prongs are one of the most kind of underrated, under-talked about components of an especially beautiful ring. But on the personal side, I love sports documentaries. And I don't really need to care about the sport. I just am so drawn to this maniacal pursuit of excellence, and I find it intimidating and inspiring and a little nuts. But I love seeing people just so far on the edge, in the pursuit of something.
One of the great things about being a podcast host is I get to get free recommendations from my guests. I'm a sports person and I like some. So actually it's funny, Kat, as you're saying this, I like good sports documentaries, but you know, what's interesting is I hate sports movies with the exception of a few of them. Like fictional sports movies, I don't really like, but I like the real motivational stories.
Yeah,
it doesn't come the same intensity. So quickly, what are your for everybody listening? What are your top sports documentaries?
So recently watched the preseason for Hard Knocks, which covered the Detroit Lions. I can't tell you.
Hapless Detroit Lions.
Yes, I can't tell you I've seen any Lions football, but by the end of it, I was rooting for every single player. And this was preseason, so they show you how they cut the roster essentially in half. Yeah. And just some heartbreaking decisions. And you feel for the coaches, you feel for the players. I have to say, and listen, I'm sure a lot of it's editing, every single player they cut who was just on the line was so gracious about it. I kept waiting for someone to like throw a water bottle, but total pros, and you're rooting for everybody. So most recently, I love that.
Yeah, Hard Knocks is pretty cool. I watch Hard Knocks sometimes. Since it doesn't sound like you're a football fan, like normally, I'm just going to give you some information. The Detroit Lions are terrible. They've been terrible for. They might be the worst team in all the NFL in the last 10 years.
Well, if now not the worst. A little better.
Even the Browns. Yeah, the Browns have made the playoffs. The Lions have just been terrible. But, you know, like they have a great coach, right? Dan Campbell is like a really funny, he's a very charismatic guy, which makes for good reality TV. And I love Hard Knocks too. And they're doing a midseason Hard Knocks with the Cardinals, Arizona Cardinals now.
That's absolutely
which
my
is cue. A new, there you go. Put it in your queue. It's out there. HBO Max. We can sponsor this podcast by HBO Max. So Kat, what's something that's inside of your comfort zone that you know other people will not either do or they're uncomfortable with it? And I'm going to take talking about jewelry and prongs right off the table because that would be an example of something that I barely know. I know what a prong is, but if you said anything else, I didn't know there's a difference in prongs. I thought it was a thing. It was a utilitarian thing that held the held the jewel.
Okay, well, so. Nothing else. You've learned something.
I've learned something. It's great.
So flattering. So, you know, absolutely on the business side of things, I think selecting jewelry for other people is a strange skill that I have. It's very intuitive work. There's no algorithm that sources the recommendations for people. So often, you know, Jason, if we were shopping for your wife, I'd ask you to send me a picture of her dressed in jeans and a picture of her dressed to a black tie wedding. And from that, I'd be able to kind of parse out what
really?
A great option for her. So it's just a weird little esoteric skill that I have and that I've always had and have sort of developed, of course, over the last few years. But I think more broadly, perhaps I'm not proving it now. I like to think I'm pretty good at small talk, which some people really hate, but I think that they're is an art to small talk where you can connect with someone and listen, it can still be transactional or just to kill time. But I think the art of small talk has really gone away because even, you know, ordering a coffee, like oftentimes you'll order it ahead of time on an app. But I'm really into just talking to random strangers.
Random strangers. Yeah. I mean, obviously I love small talk. Anybody listen? Like I love small talk. I love small talk, medium talk. Large talk, deep talk, shallow talk. It's all, I just like to communicate with people. That's so, man, that's so cool. I didn't realize that that's how you did it. I'm relating what you do back to how I purchased the ring for my wife. And I was referred somebody and he wasn't a jeweler. He was a jeweler. I think he went and sourced the materials, but I don't think he like said, hey, send me a couple of pictures. It was more like, do you know what she wants? Which had me go, hey, do you know what you want? Which the answer for my wife, plug for episode one of this season, season three, she knows what she wants most of the time. So like she came and like kind of, you know, showed me a diagram and then he basically built that. But I think there's something really cool about like working with somebody like you and saying, let's actually see the surprise. Like what is this person? That's super cool, Kat. I love that model.
So I should say that the engagement ring process is a little bit different than sourcing a great gift. I think the element of surprise for a gift is so crucial. I have to say you did much better than you think you did for the engagement ring, because one of my kind of core tips is, you know, 9 times out of 10, a woman has some idea of what she wants. And for an engagement ring, you want to stick the landing. It's something you hope to wear under her left hand every day for many, many years to come and not be looking to upgrade in 5 or 10 years. So the engagement ring is one area where almost always I think that there should be some input from the person who will be wearing the piece. But on the gifting side, I really encourage a lot of my clients to move away from links or, you know, exact specifications and, you know, how can we work together to find an opportunity to be extra thoughtful. I recently did a gift with the client who the first thing he told me was his wife had beautiful blue eyes. So we sourced something with blue sapphires and he was so excited to tell her that he thought the sapphire was going to make her eyes pop. And it was just a cool experience of being able to, again, like find an opportunity to make it a little bit more meaningful. But I have to say on the engagement ring side, it's a bit of an exception there. There are design opportunities to customize it a little bit, but you got to respect what the bride wants.
Man, yes. I think that's a really good rule. Respect what the bride wants. I like the, you know, from a marketing perspective, I like the branding. You're like, I'll do it for you. And you'll also get a lot of brownie points. You'll do well with your partner. I like that.
Well, you know, just knowing that you are a marketing guy, when I first started the business, I wanted to be the hero. Like, look what an amazingly accurate, wonderful recommendation I sourced. Ew. But I've realized that the person buying the piece has to be the hero. And so to the extent the client had such a great experience that they're parroting back what I've said, which was the sapphires are going to make your eyes pop. Like, that's how I know I've done my job. So I'm looking for clients who absolutely want to be helped, but I've learned they need to make the final call. They need to own the decision so that they can then be really proud of the decision. Whenever we get down to the last two options, they're like, I don't know, you pick. It never turns out kind of as well as I'd hope, because with something so personal, with the stakes, you know, feeling kind of high, jewelry is such an intimate purchase. They have to, you know, 10 times out of 10, they have to make the final call.
Yeah, that's interesting. So let's flip that question and talk about something that is uncomfortable for you, something outside of your comfort zone, Kat. that you know other people are down for. And I see you're laughing, which means this seems like a very accessible thing for you. So what is it?
Yes. You know, I consider myself to be, you know, fairly intelligent, and I love to tell a good story. For the life of me, I am so bad at game night games like charades, and any of those sort of performative games. And it, like, every time my friends are like, we thought you would be so much better at this than you are. I think some of it's a little bit of practice. Like, you know, in my house growing up, like, we weren't playing those types of games, but it looks so fun and it looks so easy. And then you want to hop in, and for whatever reason, I can't connect the dots. I guess I'm always looking to use words, which is usually cheating, but.
Yeah, that's funny. Like, charades are like, that doesn't make any sense compared to the word. Like, the word, you're like, what are you doing, Kat? That has nothing to do with, no, I didn't,
and
I would never gotten
that. I get so frustrated,
that.
And I'm like either cheating or like mouthing the word. So, and I'm competitive, so I don't like to lose. So the whole thing, game night for me is not my thing.
Yeah. Well, game night, if it's more like categories or something, is probably good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Anything words, me too. I like the charade stuff. It's not that we play it. We play with the kids now. With our kids, which is kind of fun.
Well, you're doing them a huge service. Teach them young.
There someday when my daughter's on a podcast, she will not have to answer charades is a thing she's comfortable with. We'll know we succeeded as parents if she succeeds as a charades player. Kat, let's talk about speaking. I don't know if you do speaking or not, but if I was to give you the global stage and everybody on the planet was going to hear this, like your 5-minute TED talk, but it was the most viral TED talk of all time. What is it that you would speak to all of us about? And what would you want us to do at the end of that 5 minutes?
So I've read a little while ago, that they were planning to remove a statue of Elvis from the Las Vegas airport because so few of the younger generation that want to come and, you know, do bottle service and spend a lot of money, so few of those people knew who he was. And
what?
I would love to talk about this idea of legacy. And then also, you know, when you can really realize just how small you are in the long, long game, you can ironically start to think bigger in your own life. But I think having a little bit of perspective and feeling less fear around going for what you want, because within the scheme of things, even Elvis, who, I mean, not just like within Vegas, who like took the entire nation by storm, you know, 50 short years later, you know, people don't know who he is. He was literally the king. And so it's not to diminish any of your accomplishments or that you shouldn't be thinking long-term about your legacy or your impact. But I mean, there are Roman empires that neither you nor I could name. And
totally.
So you've got to do what feels good for you. And you got to help other people along the way. It's both more serious and less serious than everybody thinks.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's such a valuable message. First of all, I did not know that story. I'm not like a huge Elvis is before my time for sure. And like he died before I was born, I believe. No, he died in, it doesn't matter. But the fact that there's anybody on the planet who doesn't know who that person is, if you saw a statue of him, just blows my mind because it's like he's such a cultural and pop icon. I'm with you on this. Well, now there's a movie, right? Well, now there's the movie out too. That the new movie with Tom Hanks and Austin, whatever his name is, who played Elvis, is supposed to be like a dead ringer, scarily like him. But what I was going to say is I had another guest on and they were talking about this idea of legacy, and their stance is like, do everything you need to do now, like do it now, because yeah, legacy is important, especially I'm a parent. So like that part of the legacy is important, but like nobody's going to remember Jason, the podcaster, or Kat, the jeweler, you know, that the thing, like that's not going to be our legacy on this planet. It's going to be, so like, why not make an impact right now? As opposed to these people like, oh, I want to leave this. I want to plan for this huge legacy, but then it like takes so long. And also, as you know, like nothing is guaranteed, like we're not guaranteed the next day. So all that can go away very quickly.
And even thinking about, you know, the Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk who want to send people to the moon. I think so much of this is centered around this master of the universe persona. And 100 years from now, nobody's going to know who they are either. They'll be in the history books, but we are all so incredibly temporary. And so to the extent you can, to your, to, you know, to your point, like, do right by people, pay attention to your kids, but still go for it, you know?
Yeah. The thing I'll say before we go for it to a quick commercial break is I'd like to believe that nobody's going to remember them. The other part of me is like, well, they might have a head on some sort of robot, or they might be in like cryostasis, and like they might be on their spaceship somewhere and like find the Fountain of Youth. It's just like, it seems like there might be something there, maybe not for this generation or the next one, but like at some point, one of these people who have the unlimited resources are going to figure out some way of like true longevity.
That's definitely coming. Maybe not for us, but
maybe not for us. We'll be gone, and all we'll have left is just this podcast episode. But you know, the cool is podcasts live on.
That's right.
As long as the software you use to host them stay up. So, Kat, we're going to take a brief commercial break. We'll be right back after this.
The Talking to Cool People podcast is brought to you by Jason Frizzell Coaching. Jason works with amazing people who are looking to find and develop their passion and purpose and create their journey to wherever it is they want to go. Check us out at jasonfrizzell.com, Facebook, or on Instagram. Jason loves hearing from anyone who thinks it would be cool to connect, to be coached, or to be a guest on our show. Email him at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com or DM him on Facebook and Instagram. And now, back to some more amazing conversation on Talking to Cool People.
All right, Kat, we are back. So what would you like us to know about you?
I would say, you know, I think the one kind of interesting thing here is prior to starting Best Kept, I was a management consultant and I had studied business in school. So I do not come from the jewelry world. I don't have a background or formal education in jewelry, but I was able to identify space in the market, which is gifting jewelry is incredibly difficult and the stakes feel high. And, you know, the true insight there was if you could make people feel like they couldn't get it wrong, that more people would take the leap and buy a really special piece of jewelry for someone they love. And so my business model has changed a little bit. My budgets and pricing minimums have changed, but that has really been just a really consistent through line the last 5 years, which is how can you eliminate risk and amp up this idea of thoughtfulness and really matching the right piece of jewelry with the right person.
Perfect. Well, if anything you'd said would have been perfect, but this is great because I didn't realize you were a corporate to a side hustler to a, you know, like I didn't realize that was a pivot because we're just getting to know each other. So I have a question for you. Do you remember the very first time that somebody paid you for your service as a business owner?
Absolutely. I was very much still in the test and learn phase. And actually one of those, I don't know if I had read about this or what inspired me to do this, but as I was starting the business, I had friends and family send me a list of 5 men that they knew. I really focused primarily on men gifting to spouses. And yes. I just took interviews. I interviewed about 25 people and asked them, have you ever bought jewelry for a partner? How'd it go? Did she return it? Went through the whole thing. And from those 25 calls, I got my first 4 or 5 clients. And it's just a great, you know, listening is of course really, really important. I did go into the conversation with no expectations. But people love to talk about their experiences. They love to connect in that way. And so, it was such a great way to bring on my first few clients. And, at the time, you know, I mentioned I didn't have any experience in the jewelry space, so I didn't have any wholesale suppliers. I didn't have any industry relationships. And so I was buying a piece of jewelry from, another source online and then just charging a consulting fee or markup on top. And the whole thing felt a little, like a little just sort of strung together, but it's wild to me looking back how, at least on the sourcing side, the process hasn't changed that much for me. I just know more people within the industry and better opportunities to source things at good prices. But
very cool. Wow, I love that. I'm a fellow corporate to something to doing my own thing as well. Let's see. I had a question for you about jewelry. So when somebody comes to you, and we're gonna peel back a little bit of the layer of your business model without giving away the trade secrets, I think. And if we're giving away trade secrets, you can tell me to shut up. So, like, I'm gonna assert how I believe this works. And I say, hey, Kat, I want you to go find my wife a necklace. And we and you and I together as partners figure out what that thing is going to be. You then go to your suppliers, hopefully multiple suppliers, and say, hey, this is the piece I need. And then you would, and I think this is how the jewelry business works overall. And then there will be kind of like a, give me your best price for this piece. And then you'll select based on best price. So like the, is that like, that's my understanding how the jewelry business generally works, especially in wholesale. It can, is that true?
You know, I would say my process is a little bit different. Typically, we'll start with a consultation and we'll have some sort of game plan by the time we're done speaking, which is my budget is X. I think we want to do an everyday necklace. And let's make sure that it broadly goes with a bracelet I got her 5 years ago that she loved. Mm. So we'll have a general game plan. But, you know, most of my clients aren't able to tell me from that first meeting, I want it to be, you know, a 7-inch bracelet with small diamond accents. Ideally, it has sort of a paper, you know, they don't know exactly what they want. They just know they want her to love it. And they can say, I want to, you know, this time around, I want to do a necklace within this budget. And then I'll go out and source anywhere between 3 to 5 really great options for you to choose from within your budget. Oh. I send them over in a PDF and I include lots of pictures on the body because I think that's one of the most difficult things about buying a piece of jewelry online is that sense of scale. And I always include information on the designer, how it was made, and also why I think it's a great choice for Susie. So that's sort of the personal kind of touch that's involved. Ooh, in terms of negotiation, I would say the larger, more established brands have a line sheet that they'll send you at the beginning of the season, which is these are their items. This is the wholesale price. This is the suggested retail price. When I'm partnering with a jeweler in the diamond district or someone who I know more personally, and you're, who sort of sells, you know, piece by piece, that's when it can become, you know, definitely more of a negotiation.
Mm. Yeah. I think that's such a, I love that model. Yeah. Just thinking about for me, like, what would I want to work with somebody like you? And that's what I'd want. I would, my first thing I'd say, you go, hey, what do you want? I'd go, well, I don't want to stand, I don't want to step into any store anywhere. That's my step number one. Number two, I want you to tell me what the trends are because I'm sure you're up on like what's the latest trends around different pieces. Yeah, this is, we may need to talk after this. It's probably about time that that we maybe make a move on that. That I, we being me, make a move with my wife. And that you're like, and for those listening, she's like, yeah, I think that's probably true.
Check.
Yep. So Kat, let's give you the hosting mic here for a minute and I'll be your guest. So what do you want to ask me? And we just met 30 minutes ago or so, and that I can answer for you and for the audience.
So Jason, given, you know, how many interesting people that you speak with every month, and you seem just like such a curious guy, I'd love to know what was the last major thing that you changed your mind about?
Oh man, that's a, Kat, you don't understand how good a question that is for somebody like me. I am not somebody who changes my mind very often. I'm a fast decision maker. And when I make a decision, I am pretty much a go ahead with it. So let's see. Major decision.
Or even topic. It's such a crazy political time right now that I...
crazy political time. Yeah. I think if the thing... I'm just going to answer what's coming up for me. And I guess this, it's not that I've completely changed my mind, but I think I'm growing into. So for background, we have a almost 7-year-old and a just turned 2-year-old. And if you have friends with kids or you have kids, like this will resonate. You're like... You have this way that it needs to go, especially with your first one. I'm going to raise them this way and we're going to do this and all these things. And I've just changed my mind about how little most of that matters. And I'm talking about like things like screen time or strict bedtime and all these things, how little that matters as compared to just being a good parent and like paying attention to them. Mm. And that's the, it's not that I ever, like we were never going to be the parents who were that strict. that's not really my style or my wife's style, but it was, you know, like they're like, oh, like you read these things about screen time and oh my gosh, here's the problems, or, you know, kids this age, they need to be in bed by this time because if they're not, or like they need to wake up this time and don't let them sleep in because then da da da. And what we just moved to is like, let's just let them be little humans. And we have a focus on, instead of like having all the rules we do have, and this is where I've changed my mind, is more around like curiosity based questions. So not how was school today? Because if you ever talk to a 6-year-old, the answer to that is usually good. But hey, what did you like about school? What was good about school today? Or what was the most fun thing you had? It's like open-ended questions. And we've even started asking our 2-year-old that now. And like, you know, you get like little 2-word answers, but like that's been a shift because, you know, a lot of cultures, like, here's all these bad things that as a parent you shouldn't be doing. And I've just shifted my mindset and maybe like had some new learnings that what seems to be making the most difference for our daughter, especially, is just being present with her, having fun, talking about how things are going, like treating her like a human that actually has a sleep rhythm that isn't perfect to go to bed at 8 p.m. every night. It isn't perfect to wake up at 7 a.m., but like what is actually going to support her? That's the thing that's coming up for me. The other thing that I've changed my mind about that's a much more lighter topic is that the Vikings actually have a chance to go far in the playoffs this year, because I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan and they're 8-1 right now, and they had the game of the year on Sunday. We're recording this on the 16th. They beat the Bills this Sunday and it was one of the greatest football games of all time. So I have changed my mind because I have so many years of trauma as a Vikings fan, of loss and trauma and heartbreak. I'm not going to use the dreaded SB word. I'm not going to say that and jinx it, but I will say I think they might have a chance to go far. Yeah, I'm not going to totally jinx it. Awesome question, Kat. Nobody in 150 some episodes has ever asked me that.
Well, I love what you were talking about. I have 2 little ones as well. And something I have found really freeing is a concept which was introduced to me called like the, and just in this instance of the 80-20 rule, which is 80% of the time you're shooting for healthy eating habits, everything else, but 20% of the time it is what it is. And yeah. You know, everybody needs to go on a little baby bender.
Baby bender.
And yeah, if we're traveling, if, 80-20 has been just very freeing.
Like perfection doesn't exist anywhere in the world, including diamonds. There's no such thing as a perfect diamond, right? Like, isn't that part of what makes diamonds unique, is there's no such thing as the perfect jewelry. Yeah. Like as parents, we're never going to be perfect because we're dealing with other humans who have their own thoughts, feelings, emotions, body sensations. Really great question. Thanks, Kat. How old are your kids?
1.5 and 3.5.
Yeah. Okay. So you got a little, you're getting into the almost talking and then the lot of talking stages.
I've been told once they're both 5. So once they're 5 and 7, life will open up to me again. So we'll see.
That will be, I think that's true. Yeah. What you'll get to experience is, oh, you're home from school. Oh, you want a snack? Oh, it's, you know where it is. It's in the cupboard. Oh, what, you want a color? Oh, you know where that is. Like, you know, the self-sufficient. Oh, Kat, it's delightful. Yeah. I mean, we're at the just turned 2 stage, which is all, there's no self-sufficiency in any stretch of any imagination.
Just more trouble they can get into.
More trouble. And also I was going to ask you, how do you manage, because you have a nice piece of jewelry on, how do you wear jewelry around your children? Don't they yank it?
So I have girls, and my husband thinks that I must whisper in their ear as they're sleeping. They both love jewelry. It's just like a natural thing. So they'll like maybe tug on a necklace, but by and large, like they're just fascinated by it. And my older daughter, she likes the small and expensive. So you would think like a 3-year-old would be drawn to the biggest faux piece. She's got a nose for the small and the expensive, which is really funny.
I can assure you, if our little guy saw a diamond necklace, he would rip it right off your neck, like immediately. Like it would be gone.
Gone.
Great question, Kat. Great question. All right. Kat, what are you passionate about?
I really am passionate about, you know, as we've alluded, I work in fine jewelry, and I think that there can sometimes be a misconception that jewelry is frivolous and it's just for a certain kind of person. But I really, really do believe that A thoughtfully selected piece of jewelry can be one of the most meaningful purchases you can make for yourself or someone you love. And I think that this idea of something that you can love and cherish and wear all the time and then pass down is really, really special. And so I think there are a lot, you know, my primary platform is definitely Instagram. And so what I call diamond porn, you know, that plays really well. It's such a visual platform. And I love it. I love a good diamond, but, and I love a big diamond, but my whole thing, and I think where I have, you know, a little bit more of a unique point of view is this idea of like really thoughtfulness and aligning the right piece with the right person. And something I feel really strongly about.
Yeah. I love the idea of jewelry as a legacy. My sister has my late grandmother's wedding ring is her wedding ring, and they redid it, but it's like, it's the, I think they kept the stone in some of it, and maybe they redid the prongs. Maybe now I can be like, hey, did you redo the prongs? But and you know, it's like a piece from the '40s, I believe, so which special. Is kind of cool. So cool. Yeah. It's so cool. And it's like, and our grandmother was a huge part of our life. Like we, you know, like she was a big part. So you can always see that. Very cool. All right. Let's see. What are you most proud of, Kat?
I mentioned this earlier, but I entered the space with not a single industry contact, and the jewelry industry at large is, you know, notoriously very insular, wary of outsiders. The majority of the people you're going to meet in the Diamond District are third or fourth generation, very skeptical of new people. And I think I'm so proud to say that 5 years in, I can help you source or make just about anything. And a lot of it has been through building these relationships, not just on the client side, but also on the supply side. Feeling silly, saying the wrong thing, but just bouncing back. I think knowing when to be humble and then also knowing when to, you know, kind of fake it till you make it. But I've learned a lot about myself trying to break into an industry that wasn't looking for a new entrant.
No, probably not. How often do you spend time in the Diamond District in New York City? You're just a quick train ride away.
Exactly. So I'm usually in the Diamond District most typically 2 days a week. Either have client appointments. We'll be going up to the diamond wholesaler to select the stone for an engagement ring. I'll be checking on custom projects that I have, picking things up, dropping things off, visiting vendors. So I love working for myself, and it's such a cliche, but it really is true for me that, you know, no 2 days are the same. It's something that I really, really love.
Did you see Uncut Gems?
Yes.
Did you find it, the portrayal of the diamond industry, realistic? Because that took place on 46th Street.
You know, I had this exact conversation with a couple of my industry friends, and it all hit for them. And a lot of those scenes were shot directly in the Diamond District, which is on 47th between 5th and 6th. And so
that's right.
Anybody on the street is very, you know, it's kind of like a lot of people know where they were when JFK was shot. People know where they were when Adam Sandler was dangling out the window because the production team had told, of course, the block that this would be happening. I have a couple different friends who said they were looking out the window and they're like, is that Adam Sandler dangling?
Well, it was very intense. As somebody who's never really shopped there, I've never really had a need to. The idea that they don't look like nice shops at all. Like, at least they were portrayed, they weren't that nice. And then it's like, you get buzzed in and then you stand in this little cube, which was actually a big part of the plot, right? Of like sitting inside of that, I guess it's like a holding area, a bulletproof holding area, which was, as you know, if you've seen it, if anybody's seen it, that's actually literally part of the plot. But like, and then going in, it's like one person at a time. And then you go in and it's like, it looks intense.
It is intense. And so I think the Diamond District isn't a great place to wander in on a beautiful Saturday afternoon and sort of window shop. You want to know who you're going to, what you're going to them for. And so it can be intimidating. So a lot of what I can offer too is, particularly on the engagement ring side, most of my diamond wholesalers, you know, aren't on the ground floor. They've got private offices up on the 15th floor. And so these are people that you, under no other circumstances, would be finding if we weren't working together. And so providing access to the right people is a huge part of the value I offer, particularly on the engagement ring side. I have grown to really love the hustle of the Diamond District, but it can be really intimidating. And, you know, you can absolutely see people kind of wandering in and are you buying, are you selling? And it's a lot, but it's such a cool place. I mean, 90% of all diamonds in the United States pass through the Diamond District at some point. It really is, you know, where it happens.
That's really cool. One more question about this, just because I got you here. How do you make sure you don't get, taken advantage of / robbed? Like, I've always wondered that because it gets portrayed in television and movies sometimes of like, oh, it's chained to your wrist. Or I can imagine it would be easy to see that people are in there, like somebody, not saying just like you, but somebody who's shopping and they've got a bunch of pieces that are worth multiple thousands of dollars. That would seem to be a target-rich environment for people that wanted to do that. Like, I know there's security on the street, obviously. How do you just keep it quiet and, you know, try and like, how do you do that?
Yes. When you're exiting the building, you always want to look somewhat discreet. And one of the best things that I did in the early days, you know, you're monitoring every single expense, but you know, the bill that I'm so excited to pay every year is for my insurance. And so you mentioned that I take the train into New York City. At different points, I'm on the train with, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars of pieces on me. And so you feel like you have insurance. I, of course, like to enter and leave when it's still light out.
Yes.
It's a huge advantage being right in Midtown. You're sort of, you know, around the corner from Rockefeller Center and these major kind of tourist areas, right next to Times Square as well. But it's something New York City is still New York City. You got to keep your eyes open and kind of keep your wits about you.
Yeah. Kat, what's something that you're afraid might actually be true about you?
I was thinking about, I mentioned, you know, everything going on with politics has kind of shaken me up. And, you know, when I'm being really honest with myself, I think I have the great privilege of being able to ignore a lot of the really nasty stuff happening because it doesn't directly affect me. And so I can acknowledge my great sense of privilege, but you know, a part of me thinks that I don't do enough to use that privilege for good. Mm. And I think it can sometimes be a little bit easy to just not pay attention or feel like that doesn't apply to me because it doesn't directly affect my life every single day. But I was walking my car last week and I was being written up for a parking ticket and I apologized profusely. And then I guess I seemed polite and had a big smile and he ripped up the ticket. And there are other people who, you know, a parking ticket violation can turn deadly. And I just started driving back and, you know, I was going to call my best friend and be like, haha, almost didn't get a ticket. And then I was like, no, like, I just seemed nice and I didn't get a ticket.
Yeah, there you go. Second part of this question that you probably don't know, maybe you do if you listen to the podcast, is what do you do to compensate for that fear?
I think talking about it is kind of the first step. So bringing it out to light, I think you can ruminate about, and sorry to bring the podcast to sort of such a dark place here with this, you know, talk of privilege and everything else. But I think talking about it with other people who I respect and admire, wondering how other people are kind of thinking about things and facing things. And then, trying to be really thoughtful about the way I talk to my daughters. And their understanding of their place in the world. But it's certainly not something that I have totally figured out. And between a 3-year-old, a 1-year-old and running a business, you can kind of convince yourself that you don't need to be pursuing too many extracurriculars. But I think there are times when I give myself too much of a pass.
There you go. In process, as they say.
Yes.
In process. If you figure out the secret sauce of that, would you please let me know?
Yes, exactly.
We'll have you back on and you'll have your 3-step process to be fully enlightened in this world. It'll be great.
Episode 251.
Kat's coming back to share her 3-step process and it's $1 million to get the process, but if you get it, you will gain enlightenment and you will be the perfect human. It'll be amazing. And it comes with a free small piece of jewelry, just a free a small one though.
For $1 million, I like it. That's the bonus.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like a QVC thing. It's like, get this and you get the little extra thing with it. Kat, how do you see the world?
I have to say, the older I get, the more half glass full I get. I think I've become a little more woo-woo the last couple years. And I really do believe that our thoughts, that we can kind of control our realities with the way that we think about things and just putting really good energy out into the world and into everything that you do. So it's strange, but I just mentioned the politics and everything else weighs heavy on me, but I'm oddly becoming more optimistic with time as well.
That's exactly the case for me as well. I think a lot of it is perspective. I think as you get older and you have children, at least for me, and it seems like you really like what you do. It's probably not perfect. You know, it's like it's work, but you really like what you do and you have a passion for it. I feel the same way. And you probably have a lot of friends who are still management consultants who, you know, it can be a fulfilling career, but I know a lot of management consultants who hate what they do.
It's a grind.
It can be a grind. It depends on the client and the kind of work you do. But yeah, I think also it sounds like you have a lot to be grateful for, especially not getting that parking ticket. I mean, wow, what a gift.
Huge.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's really great. I have a similar perspective that, and also I don't know if this resonates for you, but also the idea that perfection isn't really a thing. And then I was never a perfectionist, but it makes life a lot more fun when you're like, you know what? It isn't going to be perfect. This might not be the perfect podcast episode, or, you know, like, oh, this client might talk to you and do an intro call and they might not end up doing business with you. But you know what? That's actually okay, because there's a lot of people who could use you. They just don't know you yet. As opposed to the scarcity context of like, I need them to do business with me because I need clients. And, you know, like probably how most people feel when they first start out. Who's going to do business with me?
I think it can be such a great excuse to not get started or to not put yourself out there because you're waiting for perfection. But, you know, something I've thought about the last few years is this idea of like being a business owner or kind of like playing house with your business. And so a business owner recognizes that, you know, you got to make sales every month and you need to ship the piece of content, even though it doesn't have maybe Netflix cinematic quality to it. And so standing behind some of the imperfections or just finding a new way, I think has been a skill that you kind of develop over and over again.
Yeah, I love it. I think we're on the same page. All right, let's talk about where people can connect with you, find out more about what you do. Give us the deets. Where can we not find you in the Diamond District? Because you're going to be very discreet.
Yes,
like, I'm not on the ground floor, as
you said.
She's out there. She's like, hi, I'm here.
I really just sort of paced the block looking for confused men.
That's actually the perfect target market for you.
It's not a bad way to generate leads. So best place to find me is on Instagram. The handle is @bestkeptjewelry. Or my website is bestkept.com. I love, you know, to your point, I love what I do and I'm always looking for people, to help them find something really special.
Yeah. And we were just catching up before we press record. It's a hot season. This is the season. This is one of the seasons with the holidays and also engagements and all that good stuff. All that good stuff.
So not too late to find the perfect holiday gift. I'm not sure when this will air, but, you know, holiday gifts and engagement rings are kind of the big thing right now.
I might need one of those. I definitely don't need the other one. I'll let you figure out which one. All right, Kat, it's been awesome to have you on to get to know you live in real life. Last thing, you mentioned Instagram. I'd love if you'd leave us with some words of wisdom that would fit on an Instagram post. What do you got for us?
So one mantra that I have developed this year that I have found to be really empowering is do no harm, take no shit. And I think that's something that I say to myself when I'm at a crossroads. And only you can kind of authentically know if it feels true to you, but do no harm, take no shit.
Don't I love that. I'm going to offer you, I'm going to straight up steal that. I love that. Do no harm. Take no shit. I have a friend who just told me this. She's a coach too. And she's like, I'm like, what's philosophy of business? She's like, it's pretty simple. Don't be weird. Don't be a dick. I'm like, that is good life advice for all of us. At some point, maybe I'll figure out a way to say that and maybe a little more for 6-year-old, but I love that. Don't be weird. Don't be a dick. And also do no harm. Take no shit. I love that. Kat, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you, Jason. True pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Talking to Cool People with Jason Frizzell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook and give us a shout out or take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. If something from today's episode piqued your interest and you'd like to connect, email us at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com. We love hearing from our listeners because you're cool people too.